Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Jay Levine to the broadcast. Jay is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota. He's responsible for the company's overall technology strategy, systems operations, applications development and controls, and technology risk management for all product, production, and business information systems. Prior to joining Blue Cross, Jay was Executive Vice President of Product Development and Chief Technology Officer of Wolters Kluwer's Financial Services, working on compliance and analytics solutions for banking, mortgage, insurance, and securities markets. Jay also served as Vice President of Software Development for the Thomson Corporation, where he oversaw the development of award-winning and market-leading training and knowledge management solutions for the legal marketplace. Jay has a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer and Information Sciences from the University of Maryland, a Master's of Science in Information Systems from George Mason University, and a Master's of Science in Management and Technology from the University of Minnesota. I recently caught up with Jay in his office in Eagan, Minnesota, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as we discussed Jay's thoughts on how IT skills are evolving, Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we spoke about the process Jay employed to get to know Blue Cross's business, as well as a variety of other topics. Jay Levine, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you, Peter.
Jay, a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with the Blue Cross Blue Shield. Probably many of them are users of Blue Cross Blue Shield in one shape or another. But many may not be quite as familiar as to the differences between the Blue companies in the various jurisdictions in which they operate. Can you describe Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota and your role in it?
Sure, Peter. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross brand, and like the other 39 Blue plans throughout the country, we operate as an independent entity, but we do share some brand affiliation, and we also share some back office processing capabilities for our national customers that have members or employees in multiple states. But in essence, we are, in Blue Cross of Minnesota, a standalone, not-for-profit health insurance plan.
Excellent. And can you describe your roles as CIO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota?
Sure. So I'm the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer for Blue Cross of Minnesota. And what that entails is I have overarching responsibility for all technology strategy, for technology operations, and I'm also a member of the executive team as far as the overall business strategy reporting to the board. And my boss is the CEO of the company.
That's great. And can you talk a bit about your priorities for the foreseeable future?
Sure. They're really multifold, as you can imagine. We have a significant operation on a day-to-day basis. There's approximately 500 full-time staff in the technology division out of an employee base of about 3,500. And so first and foremost is expected to keep the lights on and to make sure that we don't have material or any significant security events. We handle a lot of data. We have 2.7 million members or customers as part of our accountability, and so priority number one is to keep the machine running. More near term, we are implementing a significant number in response to an ongoing series of federal and state mandates around upgrading the data structures and the EDI infrastructure, and also the simplification of some of the workflows from paper to electronic. There's just a whole portfolio of modernization initiatives that are part, if you will, of running the business as we go forward as a major claims processor. We do about 40 million transactions a year on behalf of our members. And then more strategically, we've been in significant investment mode in Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota around upgrading what has traditionally been a business-to-business, I'd say batch mode kind of business, where we deal largely with very large employer groups as well as mid-sized and small employers, and really trying to make the long-term shift to more direct consumer models as the shift in our healthcare or health insurance model inside the United States evolves from what has historically been primarily an employer-based or an employer-sponsored benefit to much more of a consumer-oriented healthcare individual procured service. And so that's going to require substantial investment over the next couple of years to move our infrastructure, the supporting or enabling IT infrastructure, from what has essentially been a very large, heavy iron B2B model to much more responsive, real-time, direct-to-consumer self-service model.
That's really interesting. It's interesting to hear you talk about that transformation, Jay. And as I think about the IT implications of your business, taking into consideration first and foremost the business that you're serving, while also taking into consideration the thoughts, the needs, the demands of customers, traditional B2B customers, B2C customers, to say nothing of the healthcare providers whose services you are helping to mediate on behalf of these various customers that you have. How do you think about the dynamics of all those different chains of command, so to speak, in terms of how IT is evolving and the needs of those various constituents?
You know, I have to admit, it's probably the most complex business transformation problem I've encountered in my career. The first thing is, of course, you got to identify who the customer is. And historically, in what I'll call the current model, although it's rapidly changing, the providers or physician networks were in many ways as important as the end user, if you will, the members. Because unlike a traditional supply chain, they play a very powerful role in the delivery of the product. And if you will, think of us as the financing arm primarily in the risk management. And you can't nor should ignore the fact that they are still an extremely important constituent in this whole equation. And so, you know, we're working very hard on working with the providers and putting in new analytics infrastructure to help them move from what's called a fee-for-service model to a quality model where we partner with them in a much more proactive way, saying, look, we need to together bring down the total cost of care and move away from what has been kind of an all-you-can-eat transaction model over the years, because that's really what the government and what the public is demanding to help rein in the increasing amount of our GDP that's spent on healthcare. So on one hand, we have an ongoing and an evolutionary change with that constituent. At the same time, kind of off to the other side is we're trying to build capabilities that instead of really focusing on large data transfers to big groups or to buyers inside of the human resource department of major corporations, start thinking about what kind of infrastructure we need to lay down, enabling IT infrastructure that allows consumers to make more informed choices and do business with us directly in a way that in a lot of ways that people do business directly today with banks and do business directly with other kinds of insurance companies, think auto insurance. So, you know, they're really related because obviously the data flows from one side of our enterprise to the other. But in many ways, we're planning these transformations separately and trying to keep them fenced off separately because, you know, if you really tried to figure out a clean path and do it all at once, it would be extremely difficult to do. So, really that you've got to break something like this down into pieces and stages. And I would say that we're farther ahead on the provider side, working with the supply chain on that side to say we need to change our payment model and change how we negotiate our initial supply contracts. That's in flight today. And we're really just now seriously thinking about what kind of IT-enabled capabilities we have to put down in 2011, 2012, and 2013 to be fully consumer-enabled by the time the full healthcare reform environment transforms in 2014.
You've been to health reform for obvious reasons. Obviously, the government's driving a tremendous amount of change. And I wonder, given the uncertainty of what will eventually unfold, how do you plan for the variety of possibilities? You've talked a bit about the transformation from what has traditionally been a B2B play to a more B2C play for the organization and the relevant transformation that will be necessary in order to realize that new paradigm. How does the organization and how do you plan for the various contingencies that are out there as to, you know, how government may direct healthcare or insurance companies and healthcare more generally speaking to change?
Well, at one level, the devil's in the details, and we recognize that the law that was just passed this year is going to continue to actually be refined over the next couple of years. But there's a couple of fundamental tenets that we feel certain about going forward. The first is there's going to be a migration from employer-based care to more individual care. I think that we feel strongly that that's inevitable. So as we start looking at how we interact with our members today, just a good example of how that's realized in practice today, you know, we think of members as belonging to a group, and we don't think of members outside the context of their relationship to their employer. As we go forward, we have to start planning membership systems that think of, if you will, customers for life, regardless of where they work, and possibly even if they get subsidized health care through their employer. But right now, the relationship has kind of a start and a stop with the relationship with the group provider. So we feel that's certain that migration is going to happen, and that regardless of how the law is ultimately rolled out, many, many employers are going to be subsidizing their employees' health care, but not necessarily managing it, their health care benefits and policies anymore. So there's things we can do to ensure that we're prepared to meet that what's essentially going to be a swelling of the ranks of what's called the individual customer. The second thing that's pretty clear to us is that customers are going to start demanding a more integrated experience as people start financing their own health care, taking greater advantage of things like health savings accounts, as businesses start subsidizing versus actually managing it. You know, right now we don't have what you could call an integrated experience. We treat members with the concept of their claims and one experience, and how they finance it, whether they're using their own health savings accounts or other mechanisms. And then thirdly, whether or not they're using any kind of health management tools are typically separate experiences today. Really, the march toward a more consumer-oriented healthcare environment is going to involve a more integrated experience, not just looking up my claim status and then separately having to go find out how are my biometrics coming on my diabetes management. And then thirdly, well, how am I paying for all this by going to possibly a bank and getting my HSA account or reconciling my various health saving instruments? So we can see already that the march has to start toward integrating the whole customer life cycle. And then lastly, as a business, you know, today, essentially we sell a group, they bring members to us. Although we do a significant individual business today, it is largely a pull model, not a push model. As the government law comes into effect in 2014, there's going to be the implementation of what are called insurance exchanges. So before they're our customer, we are going to have to be much more consumer action oriented around branding and around attracting customers to our business from these exchanges, where we'll be competing with a lot of other health insurance providers. And then managing them in a more traditional consumer way with things like CRM, with customer relationship management tools that today we just don't employ because it's not really part of our customer capture life cycle. And so really it's going to be a wholesale transformation on the front end with our marketing message, with our managing of leads, with our managing of closing customers, and then the whole life cycle beyond that once we deliver the service. All that infrastructure really has to be put in place by 2014 or sooner, if we're going to really compete as effectively as we aspire to in the individual market.
That's great. Just listening to the depth of your response to that, Jay, it's evident how interwoven you are into the strategic fabric of your organization, to say nothing of the deeper understanding you have of the dynamics of the healthcare marketplace right now. It may be surprising to some of our listeners that as of a couple of years ago, you'd never actually worked in healthcare before. And I'd love for you to tell us a bit about how you've gone from zero to 60. How did you educate yourself in the needs of your business? How did you immerse yourself into the dynamics of healthcare? Healthcare when you took on this challenge?
Well, I mean, seriously, you have to read a tremendous amount and constantly. It is, in many ways, the most complex supply chain I've ever been involved with. And the reason is there are so many very active parts of the supply chain. There's a lot of politics involved, as I think any citizen would acknowledge it, looking at the last year and a half of what's gone in Washington. And unlike traditional supply chains, you know, the people at one end, the providers, the doctors have a lot of pricing power. It's usually not the case in a more traditional manufacturing environment. So on one hand, the models are pretty simple, you know, and how you assemble the product. On the other, the parts themselves are very complex, and you're dealing with the delivery of services that involve people's health. And so these are very subtle judgments that these companies make, and there's a lot of visibility into our activities. So To answer your question directly, I read a ton. I was able to also get some training from an organization called AHIP, which is the Industry Trade Association. They actually have some curriculum. And, you know, at a kind of technical level, that was not a very high hurdle for me to leap, because our back office and our technology infrastructure is really not that different than the industry I came from, which was financial services. But I'm still learning every day, and there are just an enormous number of nuances around what we deliver to our membership and how we interact with our suppliers. And I think I'm just at the beginning of the journey, to be honest with you.
I think actually it's interesting to think back to an earlier response of yours and drawing parallels between the journey that you're embarking on and some other industries you might draw best practices from. You mentioned auto insurance, for instance. And I think it's interesting to hear the way you think, that it's not just the parallels from your direct competition, the Blues, for instance, or the other healthcare insurance companies within your jurisdictions and your geographies, but rather also casting the net a bit more broadly for parallels in tangentially related fields as well.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And so it's kind of an interesting problem with healthcare. On one hand, it's a somewhat insular industry in that a lot of people have been in it, and they've been in it their whole career. And they sometimes have a little difficulty believing that there are parallels, because it has so many unique factors. But it's not completely unique. It's not totally proprietary. I was at an insurance industry conference which had people from property and casualty and from auto, and then also people who were hybrids of life, property, and casualty, as well as they had the financing arm. They ran actually financial services. And, you know, there are striking similarities to some of our adjacent insurance verticals, and some of them are a lot farther down the road, quite frankly, than we are in this consumerization or creating, if you will, from what used to be a group to an individual business. So there are some parallels that make it pretty easy to say this is about what it should look like. But like I said, healthcare is a very peculiar animal, and the devil is in the details. And then when you throw in Washington and regulation, and of course there's 50 state regulators involved as well, so Minnesota healthcare and health insurance doesn't look like necessarily Iowa, North Dakota, or South Dakota. It's a lifelong learning opportunity is what I would say, but there's plenty of low-hanging fruit to go after right now, even without the 20 years experience that a lot of my colleagues have.
That's great. And most of your career, Jay, has been spent in for-profit companies. You mentioned you came from the financial services realm, for instance. You currently work for a nonprofit company, as you'd mentioned. How does the dynamic change in the role of IT and how the company views its IT investments within this environment versus the ones you've been in previously?
Actually, I would argue not very much at all. Not for profit, we still have to run it like a business, and we still rely strongly on financial discipline and ROI calculations for everything we do. So I would actually argue that really no different whatsoever in how we execute our various operational agendas in the enterprise. What is different is that a lot of the people here, and I'd like to count myself among them, are doing it for more than just the paycheck. We do a lot of community activities. We run a foundation that we take a lot of our excess, when there are excess operating income, we put it back into the foundation. We don't distribute it to shareholders. So, you know, our basic moniker is we're doing it for stakeholders, not shareholders. So, yes, we're a not-for-profit, but we still have to run it as a successful, basically a zero-sum business, because without at least breaking even and doing a little better than break even as a not-for-profit, we wouldn't be able to continue with the mission. But there's certainly an element of community involvement that you don't see as much with for-profit companies. And you certainly have people here who have committed themselves to the healthcare industry as a career, again, beyond just the kind of selfish motives. They view it as a noble cause. And I take a lot of pride in being associated with a company that makes that effort. And we're very active in the community at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota. And as I mentioned, we actually run several foundations to help deal with the obesity challenge, it's an epidemic in this country. The smoking cessation is a big part of our agenda. And in general, community health and getting better outcomes for all is a lot of what we focus our efforts on beyond just delivering the basic service of health insurance.
That's really great. You, like a lot of CIOs, Jay, have led a labor transformation within your team, and you've developed a bigger mix between employees and leveraging some strategic partners who are outside of your organization. How do you see the work of IT departments changing, and what does it mean from a personnel and a leadership perspective in your mind?
There's a couple of answers to that. First of all, it's a very hard thing to do in an industry that historically has been very proprietary in how they source labor, and where their systems have largely been inside the enterprise almost exclusively. So it's been quite a journey. It's something you have to do if you're going to manage your commodity costs and get your administrative cost in line with other best practices throughout the industry. But it is a tough cultural change, and we're not completely there yet, even though we've taken some significant steps. The other dimension of that, too, though, is the issue of not building everything here. You know, I think there's a tradition, at least as I understand it, in many health insurance companies over the years, to build everything inside their firewall. There's legitimate sensitivities to security, so making sure that you have high reliability and the high integrity to your operations. And I think over the years, opportunities have probably not been taken advantage of, as other industries like financial services has found that many of those same requirements for operational efficiency and operational integrity and data security can be met with partnerships. And I think health insurance is a little late to that game. And so, we've been driving what I'll call the commodity capabilities in a real thoughtful fashion. To find the low-cost provider is what our mantra is. And some of that includes some of our commodity labor when it comes to maintaining legacy systems that are 20, 30 years old in some cases. But secondly, the other thing it requires is, in order to move at the speed of consumer, that's a real sea change with how people develop software inside of a traditional insurance company. And so we're looking increasingly for some of my leadership to start thinking more like managers who are system integration managers, and less about traditional big iron or distributed developers. And the reason is, there's a lot of folks who aren't used to partnering with outside third-party providers of IT capabilities, whether they're front office faced or whether they're in the back office, again, because of that sensitivity around doing things outside of the four walls. But it's really a requirement as we go forward that a good portion of my team understand that it's okay to do a buy versus build equation, and that you should start with what's the quickest way to get it to market that meets requirements and not be obsessively gated by having to do it inside the four walls, because that's the only way you can absolutely ensure certain levels of operational integrity. There's got to be a balance if you're going to meet the really rapidly changing marketplace. We're just used to very long time cycles in this industry, and that's going to have to change. And we're pushing that change by increasingly challenging, why are we building it here? Does it really distinguish us? And if we can get a sufficiently robust outside partner in a fraction of the time, and if we can avoid having to constantly put in capital for maintenance, why shouldn't we do that? And that's a cultural change in this industry. It's not unique to my organization. As I've looked around, talked to other colleagues in this industry, they're all coming to the same place very quickly, that we've got to start taking some lessons from other highly regulated vertical industries like financial services, like the other insurance verticals, quite frankly, who have taken advantage of these mixed models for sourcing labor and mixed models for sourcing solutions in order to have a much more responsive speed to market. And we're in that journey now.
That's great. Thank you. One last question for you, Jay, before I let you go. As you think about the future and you think about technology trends currently, which among them particularly excites you, and how do you see leveraging those, either personally or professionally, I should say?
Personally, professionally. Well, I mean, personally, it's pretty hard not to be excited about all the mobility and all the mobile device technology out there. I'm old enough to remember that email was exciting, but when you start looking at what's going on with iPads and Android technology on the mobile devices, it is pretty amazing how much capability is in your fingertips nowadays. And it really, that's game-changing stuff at so many levels, at a personal level, obviously, for all of us. And in the business, the idea that, people can get really deep, deep information about their healthcare needs, about their financing, about their, how do I even get to my doctor, and just simply have my phone become my GPS and then route me around traffic. I can't help but be excited about that, because I'm like from the Star Trek generation. When I used to watch those guys talk on the little communicator devices, it's like, we're here. It's just hard to believe I live to see that. I think the bigger questions on you know, how much of the cloud and software as a service model from a professional point of view, you know, I'm dealing with a very large infrastructure inside my four walls, and we are undergoing a critical examination of, you know, what services should be literally software services on a transactional basis versus licensed software. So just the whole movement into, I want to use cloud computing, but really more thoughtfully, you know, significant software applications that are served up as software as a service is going to have a big impact on how we do business here. And then that's exciting because I can do some really transformational stuff in a very short period of time, whereas before they would require a fairly significant multi-year re-engineering efforts. That's very exciting for us right now.
That's great. Well, Jay, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been great to get your perspectives that I think are not only of interest by virtue of parallels drawn from your experiences in your industry, but as these are transformations that are going to impact us all as users of the healthcare industry, this was of particular interest. So thank you so much, Jay.
Always a pleasure, Peter.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information about these five principles and sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com. And please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our editor is Chris Davis, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.